This is the Feudal Podcast with Zach and Ian. If you would like to get a hold of us, please send an email to ian.strope@gmail.com. Thank you and enjoy. Nice if we could bring some funny every now and again. We're gonna
don't
now
say bring the funny. It reminds me of Joey Gladstone and that cross-eyed lady.
Weird. Who's the cross-eyed lady?
The lady who was on America's Funniest People.
Oh, with Joey Gladstone.
And they always said,
wasn't that Tawny Kitaen?
No funny, no money. Was it? It was some cross-eyed chick with huge collagen lips.
I think that's Tawny Kitaen that was on.
It wasn't Tawny Kitaen. It was some blonde chick.
Gosh, maybe they had more than one.
Did more than one Tawny Kitaen model?
No, more than one female guest host of America's Funniest People.
You know, there was another lady, but that wasn't
one of them was
Tawny
Kitaen.
No. I'm going to look it up right now just to prove you wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, this one's going to be about robots in honor of me finally watching Transformers, which...
Yeah, we got to talk about that, man.
I think I watched it safely enough after all the hype had died down and everything, but I did watch it in its unoriginal, unintended form. I watched it on a smaller television screen at my brother's
bad
place.
Choice.
With
your brother. That was probably unintended also.
Well, and he was drunk. And
is this?
It was just like the regular TV speakers. It wasn't on my 5.1 system.
America's Funniest People. Go ahead. Oh, my gosh. Tawny Kitaen replaced Arlene Sorkin in 92. You're right. I stand corrected.
Now what are you going to do?
The announcer was Ernie Anderson. I guess I owe you that hand job.
Oh, boy. So I watched Transformers today on a smaller, like a 27-inch TV on the TV speakers. Because of that, I think that the sort of Buster Keaton-esque abstract expressionism, de Kooning woman descending the stairs kind of feeling that the movie had was a little less intense, and so I was a little less like put in a state of nauseam by it, which is what I think a big criticism of the film was from podcasts I listened to when they first saw it at the theater. And I could probably see that if it were in a bigger scope, it definitely would have bothered me a little more to have all that stuff going on.
You know what the thing is that I understand that, but I've seen some of the worst examples of films with shaky cam and things in action. The first and second Bourne movies.
You think those are bad examples?
They're terrible in terms of action. In terms of action. Because the action is fantastic, but the filming of it is just...
What about the third? Have you seen the first third yet?
I still haven't watched
it. Okay, so then this is a total opposition to what other podcasters have been saying. Most podcasters I've heard have described the shaky cam that Michael Bay does as being not good, and the shaky cam that someone like Paul Greengrass did in the second Bourne movie. No, it was Doug Liman that did the first one.
Yes.
But in the second one, and the third Bourne movie, they said even better, as being kind of more to the point, more realistic or visceral
But here's the thing, is that... Michael Bay did a thing in the Transformers movies where it wasn't that it was so close up what being the problem. It was the same problem he always has, which is it's cutting too fast in the action scenes. And actually, he toned down the cuts. I was noticing, because I always do when I watch a Michael Bay film, I keep track of, like, I go, like, one Mississippi cut, one cut, one miscut, you know, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, especially in the more quote-unquote comedic moments, like the first... You know, half of the film.
Yeah.
He really toned it down with the cuts.
Those parts did not feel as much like a Michael Bay movie.
They didn't, except for, you know, the filter thing, which I talked about.
The filter thing, yeah. But for one thing I noticed is the unmotivated camera movement. He just like he's in the parking lot, the used car lot with the Bernie Mac scene.
It still looked like,
and it looked like it was just like he did this 360 dolly thing.
Right.
He did this like low come up dolly thing, you know,
right,
that he does. That just was. It's totally unmotivated, and it's, I don't know, it's stupid. I guess I don't really like Bay's style as much. I mean, when I first saw it, like in The Rock and stuff, I thought it was very cool and the quick cuts. Saw how that worked, but I think it's like the same way as like an old Puff Daddy, yeah, like Hype Williams video. When I saw a couple of them, I was like, that was cool. Well, and after a while, it burned out on
it. The sad thing is, he's the most successful, money wise, of the Bruckheimer directors, and so he's going to continue to get those films.
What about like Tony Scott? Was he
Tony Scott has not had huge money movies. Top Gun made a decent amount of money for what it was made for. There's been a few others. Crimson Tide made a decent amount. But, I mean, Ridley Scott, who makes far better films than Tony Scott, has still had bigger blockbusters than Tony has for the most part. Gladiator made a lot of money. I think that my problem with the action in those Bourne movies, in the Bourne movies, the first two that I've seen, the problem is that the camera is... the shot is set in so close to the action, and it's shaking, and it's fast cuts, and it's out of focus. Combination of those four things, and all you know is there's a loud clatter and people are punching each other. You can't even tell who's punching who. That's basically what I got from those, and I think they're great movies. And I
could review them again, but I think the other problem with Transformers though is there was like a lack of commitment to really like commit to showing the Transformers in a lot of senses. Like, if you ever got like a full wide shot of them, it was from really far. It was like a serious like far shot.
What did you think of
the rest of the time there was some stuff that was just kind of like slammed together and put together.
What did you think though of the integration of them into scenes in terms of, because I thought it actually looked really good.
Like I said, I called it like a Buster Keaton sort of, I mean, that last sequence with all the action, the reason I said it was Buster Keaton is because you follow the main character, the kid, and at certain points it's like he's running from
Jonathan
stuff.
Jonathan
Witwicky. Yeah, with Witwicky. And he's running from stuff, and stuff's like falling down and collapsing all over him. And it's like he always seems to sort of dodge it, but you never really see how he dodges it. And it's kind of like... It's definitely like an incoherent kind of editing structure going on.
Well, you know, another thing is it uses a lot of the long focus. Instead of going, like, it kind of suffers from that same sort of Bourne identity fight scene thing. But what it's doing is the camera is set probably 100 feet away from him as he's running, but it's in so tight with the focus and probably the zoom as well that it looks like things are falling around him when they're actually falling, you know, 50 feet away.
That's what the zoom lens would do. It compresses space. So, I mean, I didn't mind it as a story so much. There was kind of a lot slammed into it, and, I mean... I don't know. The John Turturro was kind of entertaining, but I could see how people could be annoyed by that character because I think some of the humor in it was kind of weird. But I kind of liked it. Like at one point, Turturro talks about how the Nokia phones are Japanese, and then the too hot to be a smart computer hacker geek chick Australian lady's like, those are actually made in Norway. And aren't they made in Norway? And it's like, and then the Secretary of Defense, played by John Voight, like, you know, just let him talk. He's kind of strange.
Yeah.
And there's little bits there. And then the credit sequence has like it breaks from itself a couple times to show like the main kid's parents getting interviewed, which is kind of funny and weird. I mean, there's a couple just offbeat things in it. I thought the main kid was his like sense of that he was putting on a show or putting on an act, it played in the first half.
He's a consummate showman.
In the first act where he was like trying to pick up the girl, and so it seemed like he played like kind of nervous and overdid it.
That's his thing.
But then he kept doing that in the movie, and at a certain point it would be like, okay, now there are giant robots and aliens, you think that like you'd stop seeming so...
Well, honestly, I mean...
Over the top or something.
It's been since the opening day that I've seen it, so I'm a little fuzzier than you, but I still have the sense that I even forget that he was in it in the second half once the action really picked up. So I think they
That happens for everybody though. There's a lot of characters, and there's like an A story and a B story that then come together. I mean, there's the military guys, and then there's the kids.
No, there's more than an A story and a B story.
And there's a John Boyd.
There's a C story, a D story, an E story. There's a
lot going on, and I think that is part of the problem. I mean, it was a pretty ambitious thing.
It's a Michael Bay thing, though.
It's possible, yeah. And I kind of like that. I like when there's like an ensemble thing going on, but
for this one, for instance,
oh, like
that's not Michael Bay, Roland Emmerich. But
no. I mean, I like that for. I think I probably got liked Independence Day about as much as I like Transformers. I mean, but I mean,
well, that doesn't sound too good.
For Independence Day, I wasn't as worn out on negative criticism of it to the point where I was like kind of feeling like, okay, I'm going to go into this.
Well,
not
you were also
much.
Like 17 when it came out, right? So
when Independence Day came out. Gosh, I
might have been younger. He might have been younger. I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. But
I was really I mean, the older I am, the less I appreciate the big blockbuster action films and stuff like that. When that came out, I was so psyched to see it before it came out, and I was so happy that I was watching it when I saw it. Same thing with Godzilla. Any big, huge.
But they did that. All three of those movies, I was excited about Stargate. I was excited about Independence Day. I was excited about Godzilla. I was really excited about Godzilla. And they all were the same Roland Emmerich, Dean Devlin. Like, they were good for the first half, but they were still setting stuff up. And then
something
about the way they end just did. I mean, Stargate, I think, is the best of the three.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like, I don't know. It's like I wanted something more epic and kick-ass than what the movie kind of amounted to. It seemed like the final act kind of just happened too quickly or something. You know what I mean? Where it's like there's too much. Like the second act is too slow and meandery, and then the final act
just
happens.
That's what second acts do, though.
Sometimes, but a good second act can be a place where it's setting the pieces up, and then you're like, now it's time. So when the final act comes in and it's all action and it's all craziness. You've earned it a little more, and you haven't just felt like you've done nothing for an hour, and now everything starts.
The common criticism that I read about Transformers from actual critics and not podcast people, since I don't listen to them.
Geek guys.
Well, I mean, most critics are geek guys anyway.
Action Network.
Yep. We're watching Opposing Forces. Or
walking under the bridge. Oh, I wonder if the Opposing Forces are Peter Paul and David Paul.
I sure hope so.
Oh, man.
It says Tom Skerritt, but I hope they have supporting.
That'd be fantastic.
So the common thread was that the second act was so comedy heavy.
Transformers?
Yes.
The second act.
Well,
that was the John Turturro thing.
But the whole long period where, which I guess still has part of the first act.
Were they looking for the glasses?
The whole thing with the kid in his car. Car helps kid get girl. Whole thing.
Yeah, that's still kind of the first act, I think.
But
the second act starts properly when all the Autobots show up.
It couldn't just be the first act though, because that happens like that starts like 15 minutes into the film, 20 minutes into the film, and then it goes for like half an hour. So unless the first act is like 45 minutes,
the first act is like 45 minutes. That's what I'm saying. I think it is, and then I think the second act is all the stuff with the Section 7 and John Turturro,
which is the worst part of the movie. Oh, Richard Roundtree is in this.
Nice. And then the third act is just once they've got the little cube, and then for some reason to destroy the cube, they feel like they need to drive back into the city and endanger a whole bunch of people and create a big action set piece.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, there's some...
Well, they were going into the city for a reason.
There was no good reason. It was like they were going to get the cube and take it to some military thing to try to destroy it or something. And in the end, all he had to do was just shove it into Megatron's chest.
I mean, they could have done that the whole time, but Megatron wasn't currently available.
That's true, yeah.
So you're kind of nitpicking here. Okay, so all those things aside, now speak lovingly about how great it was. Go. Everything you enjoyed about it. Go.
I enjoyed that... In a Michael Bay movie, they did take the time to do some mildly offbeat humor elements. I did enjoy the John Turturro character, even though it was kind of weird and kind of out of place. I think I just enjoyed it because he was having a good time as an actor doing this character in sort of a strange movie. I did enjoy that Peter Cullen was Optimus Prime. I'm a geek for that, I'll admit. I think that's that he's got a great Optimus Prime voice. I did enjoy the way it kind of took its time to, the opening with the helicopter and stuff, that it just kind of started. I don't know. I felt like it had a good general structure, but it tried to bite off a little more than it could chew with the whole backstory of his great grandfather in the North Pole, and it seemed like it got a little overly convoluted with things like that.
Well, you know what's funny is that they didn't introduce those. Those are all from the actual Transformers storyline. The Witwickies are prominently featured in parts of either the cartoon or the comic, or
maybe
the movie as well. Witwickies,
well, I mean, that character is, but there's no Megatron frozen in the tundra.
No.
It's a little different.
I mean, you're going to get that with any sort of
guy looks like Robert Goulet, the
remake
general.
A little bit, except he's got curly hair, obviously. Goulet has long, lustrous locks. Not long, but straight and delicious.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, I think after all the backwash of Transformers or whatever, I didn't mind it that much.
Thank you. Wanted to hear it. Because I think I was one of the few proponents of it that I knew personally. Because yeah. I read all... There were a lot of positive reviews, and there were a lot of people who supported it, and I just didn't personally know any of them. Everyone I talked to was like, it sucked. It didn't suck. It was just a big budget action film, and it had fantastic, you know, action and set pieces, and I didn't see the problems with the fight scenes. I mean, understandably, all the robots have, they computer generated like thousands of moving parts in each one, which are constantly moving during the fight scene, so it's going to look like
there's
that, you know?
A little bit of that, yeah. I didn't notice that so much. Maybe they changed some stuff for the DVD. Maybe they.
And also, I mean, anyone who just watches it on DVD, you really were missing the sheer spectacle of it, and you come out feeling like you just saw, you know, something noteworthy and extremely entertaining when you come out of the theater, a big, huge theater. So yeah. If you're watching on your little TV next to your drunk brother, it's probably different.
You know, yeah.
Though, that would be cool if he was in the theater next to me, drunk. Maybe we need to plan that sometime.
We probably should. Yeah. He wants to go see Iron Man because they had the Iron Man trailer.
Okay, yeah.
And he's like, I want to go see this. This looks awesome.
So I wanted to bring up a couple more things about Transformers, if I could.
Sure.
And first of all, this is going to be a two-part question. Did you think that Megan Fox was incredibly hot? And secondly, it's really not a two-part question. It's just two separate questions. How do you feel about the deaths of major characters in the Transformer franchise?
Okay.
Specifically, the Autobot death, because there are also several Decepticon deaths that aren't really that important because they're Decepticons.
No. I'll do the second part first, and the first part last, if that's all
okay.
right.
Okay. It's your show, dude.
Jazz gets ripped in half by Megatron, but it happens in such a chaotic fashion that it's really kind of never emphasized terribly well, which right. could have been a good time to do that. Plus, like, I had a real problem figuring out the scope of the Transformers to one another. Like, when Megatron rips Jazz in half, he's, like, really tiny compared to Megatron.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, I just had trouble getting a sense of scale in some cases, sometimes. It seemed like...
But you think he was...
It just seemed like he shouldn't have been that small compared to
Megatron.
Megatron
was supposed to be bigger than Optimus Prime.
And he might have even been, but like I said, it was tough to tell. Anyway, so that was rough. First of all, Jazz's character was only presented really quickly, and he was presented in what I consider to be kind of a... I don't know, maybe it was a callback to the original character, obviously, who was kind of a hip-hoppy...
Speaking kind of, in rhyme.
But really, they just did it all at once real fast, yeah. And it seemed really kind of just flat-out kind of racist, let's just put it that way. So the one black Transformer dies. That was pretty rough.
Right.
Bumblebee got his legs blown off or something, yeah. And then decided he wanted to stay on Earth with no
legs.
He'll
be all right. They'll fix him.
Yeah. I guess Ratchet can fix him before he... I guess all the Transformers are staying
They decided
on
to stay.
Yeah, and they had nowhere else to go.
And they did a call out to all the other Autobots in the
galaxy.
Right.
And
come on to Earth. It's a cool place.
Starscream flew off. Yeah. Because they never
Starscream's going to go back and get the other guys and bring them back.
Yeah, they didn't account for like half the Autobot, the Decepticons.
Oh, no.
I
think they did it on purpose.
Like Bone Crusher? Yeah. I don't think they ever accounted for what happened to him.
No, he did get...
was he the one that Prime took out with his sword? Because
that was
pretty
cool. That was really awesome.
When the head falls in the foreground?
That was... You got to remind me for these because I wasn't that good with the Decepticon names except when
either.
I was a kid. So which one was Bone Crusher?
I don't think
for
he
sure?
was a red original Decepticon name. I don't remember that character.
Devastator is the helicopter, right? And Scorponok is just a little scorpion guy who pops out of the sand chasing those guys.
Sort of, I think, or it was a later reference to an Insecticon, probably. I'm not up on my Transformers character names as much as I should be.
I didn't like the cartoony use of. What's his name? The boombox one. I'm not just saying the movie used it badly.
I don't know if the cartoon show had a little boombox.
Oh yeah.
Boombox.
Well, I mean, he wasn't little, but that's the thing is that I mean, it was dumb to begin with.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, Soundwave was awesome. Soundwave wasn't a boombox, was he? Soundwave was a recorder. He had tapes, and he had Ravage and Rumble, and Laserbeak. that would come out of his chest. And Soundwave was like the second, he was like the stoic second in command to Megatron. He was like the real second in command, because Starscream and Megatron always had that sort of interplay of like hatred and everything.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, the one that was in the movie is Frenzy. It wasn't.
Yeah, Frenzy. Yeah. That's what he was called. Anyway, yeah, screw Frenzy. He wasn't very fun. I think that it was kind of strange because the violence was pretty heavy-handed.
It was, because...
And at a certain point, it seemed like Prime felt bad that Megatron was dead. Like, after Megatron, he's like, I'm sorry, this is just the way I had to go, friend. But was he talking to Jazz or something?
Because I
got confused.
Because, well, at
one
point,
like
he talked
the
about...
Whole...
The only time I think he mentioned Jazz was when they said, like, the tiny little speech he gave, like,
yeah,
we lost a friend, soldier, but we made some new ones, so it all kind of evens out, you know?
Jazz was a good comrade.
But Jonathan Witwicky is an equal comrade.
I can't really do Prime as well. I can do Megatron really well, though. Not fantastic.
And also, you
well,
said the,
well.
The you liked the Peter Cullen thing, and I know that was just kind of to throw fanboys a bone. I didn't think it worked for the movie.
Some people have said it didn't. Some people thought like George Clooney would have been more.
I'm not thinking that because, you know, honestly, I totally forgot until the very end of the movie. I knew it was what's his name was. Megatron.
Hugo Weaving.
Yeah,
Megatron.
I knew he was Megatron.
That didn't matter at all
during the movie because I was thinking who, you know, didn't even sound like anyone.
No,
it didn't sound like him at all. So when it was finally over, I was like, oh, right. I knew before, and I'm now reminded that it was Hugo Weaving. But I think that the voice is so unimportant with the Transformers that I don't know if. Because.
Okay, Peter Cullen was Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
Because Optimus Prime.
Okay, but the guy who played Megatron was the same guy through all the cartoons and everything.
Yeah,
like
I know.
That too.
And that would have been cool to have him too. But
that guy's voice was ridiculous.
You know. Like,
basically, he sounded like Cobra Commander.
Why would you throw away your life so recklessly? No, Megatron. It's you who will die today.
What did you think about that scene on? Gosh, what's the name of their damn planet?
Cybertron?
Yeah, where it shows Megatron standing on some, like, fiery hill, and he throws a spear at some...
I know, it was weird.
At some Transformer walking down the hill with the valley below.
It was kind of, like, quick and whatever. Yeah.
Interesting.
She was pretty hot, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, Megan Fox. Now, a little back information about Megan Fox. She's 21 years old, and she's married to Brian Austin Green. What do you think about the entire genre of robot films and where they stack up in other genres? It's kind of a part of sci-fi for the most part, so you kind of have to lump it
usually,
in there.
They're usually science fiction because robot technology is not to the degree now that it can just be incorporated into stuff super realistically. I just saw a clip on my friend's blog of a artificial arm that's pretty got some pretty crazy sensitivity issues and stuff. So
cool.
They're certainly making
I've heard of that
leaps
yeah.
and bounds in that respect. But yeah, I would say it's primarily within the realm of science fiction. And then not only you got to clarify that there are robots. There are automatons, there are androids and cyborgs and artificial intelligences. I mean, is 2001 a robot movie? No, but it's an artificial intelligence movie. It's about computers. The Matrix is more of an artificial intelligent movie, though it does have some, you know, robot devices in it. Something like Ghost in the Shell is primarily about cyborgs, which I think the definition is that a cyborg is
human brain with robot parts.
Robot parts, and so it's got a ghost or a soul.
And what's an android?
Android.
An anthropomorphized
robot. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
And what's a droid?
It's just non-anthropomorphized. It doesn't have a skin coating.
Okay.
I guess. That
so an android has to have a skin coating?
Androgen.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, so you get a couple different interesting themes with the robot concept. So my overblown philosophical thing is not really even mine. It's taken from a Wired article I read, but it will lead to my pitch at some point later. It's this, and I kind of agreed with it. It was weird, but the whole thing about Peter Cullen doing Prime's voice is that if you were a kid in the 80s, you watched Transformers, and you had the sense that like Prime was kind of like a father figure on television for a huge generation of us kids, kind of, in a weird way, because he was always confident as that character. The Autobots are always in the, they're always in the, like, with their backs against the wall in almost every episode of that show, because being, and they'd explain it later that the,
there's less of them, aren't there?
There's less of them. The Quintessons built the Autobots and the Decepticons. One is a consumer model and one is a military model, and the Decepticons are military. So they're built to be fighting. The Autobots are usually just, primarily they're just automobiles, so they're stuck on the ground. There's a few of them that can do other things or fly. So they're kind of, like, if you will, they're like the domestic force fighting this higher end. But Prime was always so confident, and Prime was always like, so he was kind of nurturing and everything else, and Peter Cullen's voice kind of conveyed that patriarchal mentality. So in a weird way, Prime is kind of like an idealized father figure to a lot of kids, I guess. At least this is what the Wired article was saying. And I was like, you know what, that kind of makes sense in a weird way. It was kind of like, you know, if you're watching Transformers, you were identifying with the little kid a little, and you were kind of seeing Prime, who was helping the kid figure stuff out and who was solving the problems, being like, like the father. And in a lot of ways, like when he gets injured really badly in one of the episodes and they have to go to Cybertron to save him, like that's a pretty scary situation. And I remember that in that episode, like they were all about to get beaten down, and then Megatron shows up. And he's, like, fighting, and he's about to win everything. And he's like, can no one stand in my way, huh? And then you hear in the background, you hear, I can, Megatron, Optimus Prime. And then they play the da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And the sun's coming down behind him. And then he beats the shit out of Megatron, like, all old style. Like actually, like, a fight where it's, like, lots of clanging and clattering. And then, which is what I think the movie was missing. It was missing just kind of straight up brutal clanging and clattering. It was a lot of, like, they were very, like, orchestrated in their movements, which I don't know. It was a little too fluid.
I still thought there was a lot of clanging and clattering, and it looked to me like pieces of them were coming off when they were punching each other, which I thought was cool.
That's true. But he ends up, like, getting Megatron on the ground and, like, stepping on his throat and going, do you yield? And I always thought that was awesome. But and then, like, in the Transformers the Motion Picture,
he's a huge no.
Optimus Prime dies. And there's this whole thing. And so, I mean, that's like an intense character. So the sense that, the sense of kind of being raised by a surrogate robotic thing is kind of something I'm going to play on later. Anyway, it was a quick philosophical one that I pretty much came up with at the end of the day here.
Okay.
So it's quick and easy. And I didn't come up with it. It was in a Wired article, and I just kind of am playing on that.
When I'm looking at various lists of robot movies to get an idea, because I mean there are so many movies with robots in them.
There's a variety.
Are we considering things where robots are prominently featured, or are the object of the film, or are the protagonists? I mean, are we kind of talking?
I think throw them out, and we'll just okay. play like well, the first sports of all, the movies. You know, ones, we can debate that.
Sure. The obvious ones I think are like obviously the Terminators, Blade Runner. Is a movie about robots.
About androids, yes.
It doesn't cover that
they're
main
bio androids,
is
though.
Necessarily a robot, though. In one version, you kind of get the inkling that he is.
They're bio androids. That the key is to Blade Runner is that they are actually cellular. They're more human than human. They're built with specific.
And they have feelings and all that junk. They have no idea collapse. That they're robots.
Mm-hmm.
Robots.
They can have memories artificially implanted.
The Star Wars films have robots all throughout them.
They're all, like, they're definitely, I think those droids fit certain class structures. It's pretty straightforward.
And according to Lucas, the main hero of all the films is R2-D2, which is garbage, but that's what
he
says.
He saves the day, like, in half the movies, though. Like, with his little, like,
You mentioned Robocop.
He uses his dick to save the day.
Okay, I'll go through some here. Screamers, you've seen, right?
No.
Oh, with Peter Weller?
Yes, I did see
it's,
it.
It's interesting.
I did that review of it.
And
remember?
It really has, yes, that's right. And it really does, that actually really has, I don't think it's that great a film. It has a really interesting kind of, not philosophical, but it's got the whole, when robots that you've created are somehow more trustworthy than humans, and in certain cases you can learn to trust because there's like a
character. Like the second android, like Bishop in Aliens?
Exactly,
that sort of thing. Some of the humans and more reliable.
That's where I think I would get a cutoff, is that I wouldn't call Aliens by any length of anything
no.
a robot film, even though there's
no, it's not,
a trustworthy
it's not a prominent aspect to it.
Short Circuit.
Clancy Brown is awesome in everything.
He really is. I love him.
And I mean, like,
he's got to be in more stuff.
Well, I mean, you said you hadn't seen all the, like, Lost, but he was in, like, a couple episodes of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was too bad. I think they killed him off. But you can never tell. All bets are off with Lost.
And then, contrary-wise, Jake Busey is kind of a sucky actor.
Yeah, Jake Busey's kind of annoying.
He was good in Frighteners. Oh, here's the nude scene.
Here's
the co-ed showers.
Well, he loves to do that. Verhoeven does. Because RoboCop, he did that, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what's weird is that Verhoeven presents things, it's like society is like egalitarian and like it's weird. Like he presents his futuristic things as like always some sort of like militaristic, close to like fascist type society, but very open in terms of like sexual mores. And it's weird. It's like it's almost like he's saying, you know,
it's kind of the what it would be considered the European socialist society. Maybe.
A little bit, yeah. But though he would tell you that he's not for that.
Possible.
Anyway, have you ever seen Runaway with Tom Selleck?
And Gene Simmons?
Yeah.
I saw half of it one Sunday afternoon when I should have been doing homework years ago. I was like, Greg! Because I used to live with a guy named Greg.
Westworld? Have you seen Westworld?
I've seen Bits It with Yul Brynner.
Yeah.
Written by Michael Crichton.
Gosh, you know, there's just... Throw out some ones that you like.
Okay, God, I made a list and then forgot to bring it.
iRobot sucks. I don't like iRobot.
Yeah, iRobot. I haven't even seen... I like the Short Circuit movies, and you give me a blank stare, so it's none of that.
I don't like the Short Circuit movies. Go ahead.
Okay, what else? I haven't seen the actual version of it, but I mean, like, the Tezuka version of Metropolis is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of a... The Tezuka version is definitely like a neo-noir, well, not even really neo-noir, it's kind of like proper noir, because the thing that's cool about that is it's like a steampunk, but with cyberpunk elements. It's like straight up futuristic stuff inserted into, and I mean, the original movie looks like it's that way, too. Well, I mean, even like stupid AI was still kind of...
You know, AI is one that always is the first thing that comes to mind with me, because it is like the quintessential movie about...
You create something, you give it a programming,
exactly.
It's stuck, it has no freedom, and then you just throw it out, and then it's like, what does it do?
And it really explores that whole theme, which a lot of movies have done, in the most beautiful way. It's incredible cinematography. It's this really poignant story.
Mm-hmm.
It's touching. It's sad. It's got some amazing set pieces. It's got some great acting. I've never seen Jude Law better. I'm not a big Jude Law fan, but I thought he was fantastic in that role.
Hmm.
Haley Joel Osment is passable, which is always good from him. I just think that I honestly think it's one of Spielberg's successes when it's really kind of it's been half and half derided by people and then beloved, and people like try to say that any sort of credit you can give to Kubrick, but I don't think Spielberg can do something without
Not
putting
really.
A stamp on it.
Kubrick could never figure out how to end it because Kubrick was such a sort of downer of a guy.
Hugely.
It was like he didn't want to make it a downer.
One thing that everyone says and I agree with is if you had ended it with the kid stuck under the bottom of the ocean looking at the statue of the fairy, then that would have been where Kubrick would have ended it.
Probably. It might have almost been better, all the weird alien shit at the
end. Instead he gets to experience this, you know, love with a parent thing for eternity.
Well, is it eternity or is it like till his... It's something like...
Until he fails? I don't know.
Until his battery dies down or some crap like
that. Well, they're an alien race. They can charge them up again.
Of course,
I guess. They've got the Energizer Bunny waiting in their ship.
Other good robot movies. RoboCop was a good one, though that's a cyborg.
It is.
That's clear.
I'm not going to say that's
cyborg.
A robot movie.
Though
there are robots in them.
Yeah, there's Ed 209.
Yeah, he gets to blow up Ed 209.
I remember that episode of South Park.
Do you remember
Park
the third one with the cyborg ninjas?
Oh, man, that was awesome. And the jetpack.
Such a bad movie,
dude. The jetpack where you could see the strings.
What an embarrassment. The second one is even... The second one is
I
one
saw
of those
the second
ones,
one in the theater.
The second one
is
one of those ones where you
with
can
Nuke?
Actually... Yeah. We could use it as a weird movie or, you know...
Maybe. I don't really know if I could defend it, because it's not that great of a movie.
Well, but the thing is, it's still one of those, like, things that you watch it and you're like, oh, that wasn't that good. And then a couple months later, you're like...
Smashing the brains on the cement.
Yeah. And then a couple months later, you're like, you know what I should watch again? RoboCop 2. I always do that. I watch it and I'm like, eh. And then like a couple months later, I'm like, oh, gosh, I need to see that again.
It's like going to some fast food place where you know it's going to give you diarrhea, but you're like, yeah, you know what? I kind of feel like having diarrhea
Taco
tonight.
Bell. That sounds great. I had it last night and I almost died, but it was like having dysentery.
I think that
you got to do the Terminator movies up there. I think Terminator 2 is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
I don't have the love for Terminator 2 that so many other people do, and I'm not quite sure why or what it is about it. I think the main protagonist, the little kid, seemed really whiny and
Furlong
bitchy.
Furlong is really annoying. And actually, I don't like Sarah Connor either.
No, I didn't care. So
I don't think she deserves a TV show.
It was like action crazy. There was stuff happening. And that was, it was a fun action movie. But, I mean, I don't know. I think for me, a good story has to just like have like a compelling protagonist doing, you know, going through the arc of whatever, you know. It doesn't necessarily have to be the hero's journey word for word, but it's more entertaining if there's something like that happening, and Terminator 2 didn't have a heck of a lot of that.
Right.
What else? Good robot movies. Well, there's different kinds of robot things. Also, we're completely forgetting, leaving out the super robot stuff, you know, anime series, just like Big O and Voltron.
I think things.
And then we're forgetting Robot Jocks, the live action.
I'm not forgetting Robot Jocks. That's actually going to be my movie I haven't seen that I'm going to talk about. So.
Wow, that'll be good because I have seen it. And
okay,
I saw it
good.
Like about 6 months ago.
Okay.
Nice.
So you're fresh on it, and I'm fresh on it too because I'm going to tell you what happened in it.
Fantastic.
What about, we've already gone through like comedy a little bit with the Short Circuit thing. What about something like Bicentennial Man, which is like the dramedy type?
I didn't end up seeing that, but I mean, I could think that that one would be because it's got the whole, isn't the whole thing that he wants to get, he slowly gets more and more human through like multiple generations of living with a family, and then in the end he realizes the last thing he can't do is die in order to be a human, so he just dies and that's the end kaput, based on Asimov's story.
Did you see Silent Running? With Bruce Dern and the ship with the trees on it and the little robots on the ship. The 70s.
That sounds really
interesting. It's a great movie. It's really weird.
There was another, there was a movie with Kirk Douglas and Farrah Fawcett where they had a robot and Harvey Keitel was in it.
What about The Black Hole?
That had a robot.
That was a creepy robot too, the big one.
Or Ice Pirates had a whole bunch of robots.
Yeah, he's got to bring up the Ice Pirates again.
Why you gotta be hating on Ice Pirates?
I'm not hating on anything.
It's good stuff.
Remember Batteries Not Included?
I like that movie.
Robots, there you go.
Yeah, I like that movie.
THX-1138. The whole police force is robots.
Yeah, that was interesting.
So I'm gonna give you my favorite movie with robots in it. Are you ready?
No.
Okay. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. And here's why.
Station built a robot, right?
Yeah, that's in the first one.
No, Station was in the second one.
Station was in the second one?
Station
right.
was in the Bogus Journey.
Evil Bill and Ted are robots.
And then they kill good Bill and Ted.
Yeah, and they're awesome. And then they take off
their
heads and they dunk their heads when they're playing basketball around the place. That's it. That's all I have to say.
That's right.
And I've always had a soft spot in my heart for that movie because the bad guy from Die Hard 2 is the Grim Reaper.
Yes, William... what was his damn name? I can't believe I'm blanking on Mr. Falcon's name.
That's not Mr. Falcon.
Well, isn't Mr. Falcon?
No, yeah. Mr. Falcon is the bearded guy that he's trying to get out. He's the general or the colonel.
Oh,
colonel something.
Oh, okay. Mr. Falcon was Castro.
Yeah, Mr. Falcon was the Castro-looking guy.
Yeah, well...
I think they might have used the same guy in Air Force One, by the way.
William Forsythe?
No, William Forsythe is the guy from Raising Arizona and all the... I'm going to say all the Steven Seagal films, even though he was only the bad guy in one of them.
Yeah.
Out for Justice or whatever.
No.
So what do you think about Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
I like Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey a lot.
Do you think that one's better than the first one? Because I honestly do, and most people don't think that. And most people say that the first one is the only decent one. But the first one was really, I think, kind of shoddily written. Not that the second one is any sort of great
Here's the thing about
piece of literature.
They both have journeys in them.
Yeah.
The scale of the journey in the second one is, I think, a little bigger, the scope of it and everything. Like, you know, they finally actually have to make it big. And there's some more, like, weird, funny, like, visual things going on. Like, I remember something about a maze. Was that when they were in, like, purgatory or they were in hell with death? and it was like all blue, and there was like different rooms.
Something like that. And then they ended up challenging Death to
a game of, yeah, and that was fun.
And they beat him at all the games because he's really not very
agile.
Was
Death the bass player or the drummer?
He ended up being the bass player.
And then Station did...
Because he, during the song they sing at the end, when he's holding the upright kiss, bass, the when he says, whether you're a king or a little street sweeper, sooner or later you'll dance with the Reaper.
Yeah, I love that. Good. Oh, man. William Sadler, that was his name. That is his
name.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah.
Good job, you did it. Success. No more fail for Ian.
Now y'all, my own.
So, just off the top of your head, you name your favorite movie with robots in it. Go. You got 5 seconds to answer.
I'm just going to say 2001.
Okay.
For Hal.
That's good.
That's a cop out, though.
He really is.
A robot.
I think I had something pretty good there with Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
I think that was. Yeah, you did. You had a.
Though, I think the robots have a total of like.
But
I think
could agree with you, but I like both of the movies, and I think I like them together. Like, the last time, I think I actually watched them for real and not just, like, bits of them on TV.
You watched them as a marathon?
I watched them as a marathon, like when friends over. Like,
what overkill.
Like a birthday party when I was, like, 15, like 10 or something.
They are eminently more enjoyable than the Wayne's World movies to watch. They really are.
I really liked the first Wayne's World movie when I was a kid. I would watch
okay,
it a lot.
If you watch
the,
if you watch the, if you watch Wayne's World and Wayne's World 2 back-to-back, and then you watch the Bill and Ted movies back-to-back, you're going to have a better feeling at the end of the Bill and Ted's because the second one is kind of offbeat and weird and has interesting, funny things.
The second Wayne's World is not that funny.
The second Wayne's World has some interesting stuff. I really like the...
I like the canoe joke. That's funny because it's just so weird.
I like the British guy from With Nail and I who's in it. Have you seen With Nail and I?
Mm-mm.
Really great. There's this guy. Who's
he's the guy telling the stories about like we had to beat them to death
with
their own shoes.
But he speaks. I mean, it's his real voice because he speaks in With Nail and I. He's a drug dealer and he shows up at their house and he's like, "What is going on with you, my friend?" Like he barely says his R's and it sounds exactly like that all the time. You can't tell what he's saying, but you get the gist of it.
Like I said, I'd love all that British sitcom stuff if it didn't have that horrible inundation of canned laughter.
Before you go tonight,
for some reason they thought about doing that.
I'm going to show you one of these episodes of something tonight. They're 25 minutes or whatever, but you need to watch one just so you get the idea because I'm not going to have you take these if you're. I think you need to get a hint of it, but
yeah.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, and by those I mean the one of you that's listening, and by what I don't
know. Our mic stands are. Lovely pieces of wood, handcrafted by my father, and based on the design of mine, an original sort of Dutch modern look. But to lift them up higher, we are using two bricks of anime for me, which is the Gungrave series, which I'm assuming you talk about at some point when Zach gets around to finishing it. And we talk crime movies and the Samurai 7 series, which we will get to talk about.
Both 7-disc boxes, so they're kind of tall. They're enough to get to the top of, just about to Ian's chin. Mine's a little bit shorter, even though...
Because you're a little bit shorter.
Well, how tall are you?
Most of my height's in my legs. I'm about 6'2".
Okay, you are taller than me. I'm just under 6'1", I think.
Okay, well, I'm probably like 6'2 and a quarter or something.
Right. Okay.
But anyway, so back to that. And Zach's got British comedy. He's got Jeeves and Wooster, if you remember. It says A&E here, but I remember it always being on PBS. I don't think it was on Mystery. Maybe
it
was.
It was on PBS. It wasn't on Mystery. It was on... Masterpiece Theater used to do
maybe
pieces at a time.
And he's got the young ones,
Rick Mile, Adrian Edmondson, Nigel Planner. Then I have Bottom, which is the more popular. Well, it had more success. The Young Ones is the one that really kicked it all off. But Adrian Edmondson and Rick Mile basically reprised their same characters through everything they did throughout their careers, and they even now I think still do stage plays based on their characters. Great. And all the shows they did, including their show in between this called Filthy Rich and Cat Flap, which was on for 6 episodes, just one series, and it was actually they have the pilot on I think this one of these discs here, and it's actually very funny.
And then you got Blackadder, collection.
Yeah.
Bensay.
What's funny is that the Rick Mile characters and Adrian Edmondson's, they always have the same names in all the shows. It's always Rick, Eddie, or some variant.
Yeah.
Richard, Richie, Rick,
Edward.
Eddie, Edward. One of them, like in Bottom, his name is Edward Hitler.
Oh my gosh.
And then, gosh, and Rick, Richie is always Richie Rich or Richard Rich.
It perfectly conveys sort of our thing. I'm sort of the anime guy. He's sort of the British comedy guy. Yeah. That means he's more well-learned and erudite, and I'm more crass, vulgar, pornographic.
You're much less crass and vulgar than me. Okay, so do you want to do pitches, or should I do my lengthy movie I haven't seen, Robot Jocks, first?
Let's do pitches first.
I'll go ahead and do mine first because you sound like you have a good idea for one, and mine is really crap. So I don't even have a title for it. If you can think of a title while I'm telling it, go for
it. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So my pitch. Ready?
Go.
It's like Major League, the movie Major League. It's baseball. I'm sorry. Once again, it's a baseball movie. Quirky characters who don't quite match up, working hard to win the World Series. It's oh, by the way, it's set a 1,000 years in the future, and everyone in it is robots. The baseball players, the fans, everyone in the world. There are no humans left. It's all robots. They never mention that, though.
So, is it live action or like a
No, it's
CG?
Live action. Live action. You could get actors in robot suits, I guess, if you wanted to. So, I mean, I don't think there's been a movie like that where all the characters are robots and there's never any mention of humans. It's set a 1,000 years in the future, so you can guess that something happened, like in The Matrix. Mm-hmm. But they still play baseball. And they all have emotions and stuff, so they're all kind of like, you know, so Bender. Maybe, they're all like Bender
is it
Bending
like
Rodriguez.
Humans just maybe decided to get rid of the fleshy confines.
Who knows? That's up for you to decide themselves while you're watching this film, which is basically a complete remake of Major League, except for they're all robots.
So that's it.
That's it. And it's called... Okay, I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, I will.
The title isn't that important, though. Of course, I did base an entire movie off the idea of a name of a movie called Jacuzzi.
Yes, and I think that one won too.
Yeah, I bet it did.
According to Seth,
I bet Jacuzzi won. Yeah. Jacuzzi.
So my pitch has to do with a point in time, maybe two or three generations from now, where children are pretty much raised by, like, robotic nannies. And there's this whole, like, servitude class of robots that handle things like teaching, and they pump gas, and they do all of the, like labor. And so in that sense, the formative years of most children's lives are spent with, like, robots and artificial intelligences. Kind of like, certain episodes of Astro Boy dealt with this, too. You know, like you might have if you were a real affluent family, you might have like a butler robot, and that would probably be like one of your only friends because your actual dad would be off being rich and wheeling and dealing and running a major multinational corporation. Anyway, people are also in this world of like Second Life, and which is still around, is going on now, where I mean they're even having like debates and stuff,
oh, yeah.
Political debates and stuff on it. So at some point, a robot ends up running for president and gets elected president. But because all of this first generation of kids that have been raised by robots reach voting age, and because they've been raised by robots, they've been sort of instructed through, like, pure reason and pure logic in a sense of, like, how to properly, like, discipline them and raise them to get them to turn out as best as they can, you know? Like a robot would never fold if you cried for a second cookie when you were two. Well, kids probably don't cry for second cookies when they're two. Maybe that's more like five.
I'm sure two-year-old of that can do it.
I don't know if they even have
my nephew's
teeth.
Two, and he's got teeth, and he wants what he wants, and if he doesn't get it, he
you
cry
put on that
once.
Nine Inch Nails song, you just go like, with teeth.
I would never
end Krampus.
I would never put on a Nine Inch Nails song.
Isn't this what you want? I guess the main issue is that the older generations are kind of aghast that the younger generation is completely taking their steps from these robots. But what ends up happening is that robots kind of take over the whole, like, bicameral system, or not necessarily the bicameral system, but the whole, like, the three branches of the government in a weird way. They'd already been in place to handle, these notes are not even useful to me anymore, to handle, judicial cases, because the databases of their precedent are quicker to register. So if someone makes an objection, they can assess it. It's similar to an episode of the second season in Ghost in the Shell. So the judicial system's already been covered by that. And then there's probably been some form of sort of like legal air check oversight comparing the judicial with the legislative. So to get a president that's like a robot is essentially you've turned over the entire governing system to machines, and it would deal with that. I mean, it would be a dystopian story in the same way that I feel A Brave New World is a dystopian story, in the sense that it wouldn't be super brutal, because Brave New World, sure, everyone, I mean, if your English teacher starts hammering out about how like awful it is and everything, if you're smart enough to use your own brain and take a step back and look at it, you'll realize that, wait a minute, everyone's happy. There are these different classes, but that's kind of an inevitable truth in life, is that there's going to be people that do certain things and people that do other things, and in the end, they all just kind of need to be happy, and there's this some kind of strange sort of ideal that everyone's going to be at the top of the peak, at the top of the mountain, and that's just not the way that science breaks down, not the way the bell curve works. So this would be a case of machines kind of not taking over in like a militaristic sense, but taking over in like a civil government sense. And I mean, I don't really know what kind of conclusion I would draw in that, but that's just my idea. So it'd be about robots taking over politics, taking over government.
What kind of like main character would you have?
I would probably have. I'm tempted to do it like. The main character would probably be a human who was raised by the robot and became president. And it would probably be intercutting between him young at different phases in his youth being raised by the robot, and then the present time, you know, it's set in the future, so, you know, their present time when he's like the campaign manager for the robot, or mm-hmm. like the chief of staff or something in a weird sort of way, or just somehow connected to working with him as he's president, to kind of see how that relationship ended up working out. And so, I don't know.
What do you call this?
I don't really know. I don't have a good one. Candidate 00101011001. I don't know what that is in binary. I'm just throwing something out there. I'm just spitballing.
Here's their quote from Sid 6.7. Just because I'm carrying the joy of killing your family inside me doesn't mean we can't be friends.
Yeah.